Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by Eats Drinks TV, a service of the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and First Reel Entertainment, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there's a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com. And also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Today I get to talk to Heath Gorenflo, who started as a straight-edge, thrashy drummer and has evolved into a top-notch Baltimore bartender serving at Dutch Courage. They have had quite a journey along the way, so let's sit down and talk about bartending, music, and community, probably the most important part of all of these things.
Hi, I'm Heath Gorenflo, working out of Baltimore. I work at I'm a bartender at Dutch Courage Gin Bar. I also play drums, and I love music, and I love bartending.
Are you in a band right now?
So technically yes. Currently I'm doing kind of two projects. They're very fresh. So I met another bartender in Baltimore named Vicky, who has been writing their own music and has a band called Supai Helwa. Supai Helwa. It is Japanese supai for sour, and helwa, sweet, in it's Egyptian, it's Arabic. Which is the singer of the band, Min, who kind of put this band together. And it's basically for them, it's been a lot of like just personal getting through life, and especially, you know, dealing with transgender issues and things like that, and going through it and being able to healthily express all that through music. So they started doing this project, and Vicky's a bartender down at Backyard in South Baltimore, which I don't get to go to too often. Mm-hmm. We actually met in Portland for Portland Cocktail Week, which is funny, though we're both Baltimore bartenders. Yeah, so last year we met in Portland, which is crazy. And they were looking for a drummer for the live stuff they were going to do because they already had electronic drums recorded. I was like, yeah, I'm looking for something. I want to pick up music again. I really miss it. I'm bartending all the time, so I need it in my blood. I need to play. So yeah, sure, I'll help you out. And got together. I listened to some of the stuff, and I'm a very chaotic drummer. I like a lot of busy craziness. Listen to the tracks, and they were really good, but it was not really up to my speed for drumming. And I was like, yeah, you know, this is pretty cool. I really like what you're doing. I just don't know if I want to play drums for this. So me and Vicky started meeting up, started playing some of her songs that she's already written. And then we just started experimenting. So we kind of started our own kind of noise project on the side, which is Grief Eater. We've only played like a house show. We haven't done anything, any recordings or anything, and it's all been improv. Been very chaotic improv.
I was gonna say chaotic improv, but that's good that you found that she can like roll with you in that stuff. You know, it's like another outlet.
totally incredible guitar player. And it's just the two of us and still making full band sounds out of just that, which has been fun. I've never done like heavy or aggressive improv before this really, other than like while I'm writing music with other people. But to actually like do that and perform it live in front of people has been really fun. So that's what I got going on right now.
That's amazing. So you have two projects, but they're with the same person.
Yeah.
Just two separate. So that means that you decided, okay, well, if we do this on the side, then I can do this other one as well.
I gotta scratch all my itches. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
We just played our first show with Supai Helwa a couple of weeks ago, right before I went to Portland Cocktail Week this year. And it went really well. It was just a fun basement show. We had a couple touring bands from Philly and New York. And I haven't played shows in a long time. And I felt like I was like, you know, 20 again. And it hit the spot. It was so much fun. And they're really beautiful people to play with. And it's been, I feel very honored and welcome to be a part of that group. And
I was going to say, nice. It sounds very meaningful and cathartic all at the same time.
For sure. Yeah. And it also helped me kind of check myself a little bit, where it's like, settle down on drums a little bit, and that's okay. And it was one of the most fun shows I've ever played, and I played a lot of shows. So,
When did you start? Was drums your first instrument?
It was, first and only. Yeah, I'm not very inclined with a lot of things. I started when I was about 12, give or take, maybe 11. And now looking back, I can see these things. At the time, I didn't know it, but I was always really fidgety and had a hard time paying attention to things. And I was growing up right during the big like Ritalin craze, where every kid in my school was getting assigned Ritalin, and my parents were like, no, this is bullshit, like you're fine, you're just, you know, you're just anxious, blah blah blah.
Give you drums instead.
Right. So literally my dad used to play drums. He's like, here's a drum set, you're tapping on stuff, tap on these. And and honestly, it basically helped me focus all my ADHD and undiagnosed things through music, and the whole world made sense through that to me. And still to this day, like, I'm just always like, when I'm anxious or whatever, it just helps me calm down when I'm tapping and I'm doing my thing. And now that I'm trained on how to tap properly, it helps even more. It just gives me something to focus on. That's kind of how I got going.
So you were given the drum set, but did you, when you dove into it, were you like, okay, now I got to start, who are some drummers, I have to start listening to stuff and doing this, or were you just banging?
I really used to kind of hate music growing up as a little kid. Like, I hated music. Yeah. And not to slam any of these artists, but like as a kid, it was just listening to stuff that didn't resonate with me. Right. Mm-hmm. So I had an older sister and a younger sister. And then my parents were like Billy Joel, Elton John, Beatles, a lot of classic rock stuff, which was all fine. I grew up with a lot of that. And my older sister was like Amy Grant, New Kids on the Block, all that kind of stuff. My younger sister was like Hanson and all that stuff. So I was listening to a lot of stuff in the car and all that I just wasn't into. And I just thought I hated music. Once I started playing drums and opening my mind up to music a little bit more and realizing there's so much more to it, and being a musician, meeting other musicians who are like, oh, you got to check this artist out, or you got to check this out. I really finally got into music once I found out there was stuff outside of what I was hearing, which is probably why I still hunt down like the not as well-known bands, because like I think there's something out there for everyone, and it's refreshing for me to hear stuff that's not quite as on the radar, because I don't know, it's been a fun discovery. So I've finally developed to learn how to like music, and then I remember hearing, Dookie by Green Day. I had a little cassette. I was probably 11. I think it was my older sister's.
I was going to ask, what was it? What was the one where you went,
that was kind of the catalyst for me, really. Yeah. I remember listening to Trey Cool on drums.
I was going to say, Trey Cool does some drumming. I mean, he's an animal back there, you know.
And at that time, like on the radio, you know, everything was like slowing down. It was a lot of like grunge rock and like, like it was like Nirvana and, you know, Pearl Jam and stuff like that. And I remember hearing Green Day, and I was like, I've never heard anything like this. It's so fast. And then picking up drums, I was like, I want to be that fast. That's cool. Like, about this. Yeah.
Do you remember what the first song you taught yourself was?
So that's the other thing. I'm not a drummer's drummer. I've done it from time to time, but I never really sat down and tried to play what other people played. Like, they've already done that. I'll try to do like little snippets. Like, I like that fill. I'm going to see if I can do that fill. Or like, I like that drum beat. Let me see if I can kind of pull off like that kind of rhythm. Some of that, I started doing more of that with a lot of hip hop stuff later on in high school, just because I really liked the grooves they were getting into. And with all my punk background and stuff, I had kind of been missing out on that part of rhythm, where I just like those nice deep grooves that you can just kind of nod your head to. Yeah, my body, my tempo is normally pretty high already, so I always like something a little more upbeat and a little higher tempo. But yeah, some of those grooves and especially hip hop really got me into like learning some of those types of things. So trying to think of like an artist that really got me, but
there were so many.
There's a lot. Yeah. I mean, I remember listening to like old Dr. Dre stuff and just loving the beats I was hearing for that. And I was just like, I just want to jam on this on drums and see what my metal guitar player has to say about it. And just, yeah, have fun with that. Yeah.
Well, what was the first band you were in? I mean, like a high school thing or.
Yeah. Started in high school. So I was probably in 10th grade, I believe we mm-hmm. finally started. We tried something in 9th grade. It didn't work out. It was Methyl Orange. That went going for quite a while, actually.
That's kind of a great name.
it was also funny because like somebody in the band wanted to like make the spelling different because it's a band and you have to, and mm-hmm, yeah. instead of the YL at the end of methyl, they did AL, so everybody thought it was a menthol orange. So it was always one of those silly, like really notoriously bad band names. That, but I'm still proud of it. I really like what we did. So that started in high school. It was my buddies from I remember wearing a Green Day shirt to school one day in like middle school or high school, and somebody's like, "Oh, if you like Green Day, here's a mixtape of real punk bands." And I was like, "Oh, cool." And that's how I got more into like real punk. So I was kind of like the punk drummer. I specialized in that. The singer I met, Joe Trainer, was super into like at the time, he'd be ashamed to admit it now probably, but he was super into like Limp Bizkit and like Deftones and stuff like that. Again, no shame, though, you know, different strokes for different folks.
Exactly.
But he liked some of the yelly stuff more than the rapping stuff. And we met a guitar player named Dan Heflin, and he just came out of Woodbridge, Virginia. He just moved to town, and he was just a metalhead through and through, Pantera, Metallica, all that stuff. And then the bass player was a friend I grew up with who felt left out and wanted to hang with his friends. So he picked up bass the day nice. We decided to form a band. And that was Methyl Orange in early high school. And that got us through, I was doing that through like 2000, probably 8 or something like that.
That's amazing.
Maybe a little before that, like 2006. But yeah,
that's so cool. Well, that's a really successful first band. I mean, if you guys play together for that long and everything, did you guys do little tours and everything? You did the whole shebang. You made it real.
Yeah, everything was DIY. We never did any real full label releases or anything like that. But we played a lot. We went to Detroit a lot. We loved Detroit. We do like mini weekend tours there all the time. Garden Bowl near Magic Stick and all that a lot. We went as far west as St. Louis and as far south as Florida. So we covered a lot of space in that time. I was early on in college, and I graduated high school 2002. So my first semester of college, I was like, okay, this is for me now. I'm learning because I want to instead of being forced to go to high school. And after that first semester, I was like, I'm wasting time. I just want to be on the road touring. And so had that talk with my parents, like, yeah, I'm not going back to school. I'm touring. And never made a dime. We only lost money, but I don't regret any of it. And I'd still do it all over again. So
you've got to have some good tour stories, though, since you were doing it all DIY.
Way too many. There's a lot of tour stories. Yeah. Yeah,
did you get to play with any like bands that you were just so like excited to play with when you were doing those tours?
Yeah, I really did. Met a lot of really great people. Honestly, like the bands we went on tour with, we got like a really tight bond with. And again, this is early 2000, so we didn't really have like we had like a car phone or something if a real emergency happened. We didn't have like cell phones and stuff. We weren't on the internet constantly, so it was a different time, you know. Sounding old as hell saying that, but it's so true.
I had that boyfriend in the 90s, and he'd go out on tour for like 6 weeks at a time, and it was the 90s, so there really was nothing, you know. It was just like calling from a payphone to home.
We're literally map questing. We have a book of map questing directions. Hopefully we don't get off track. It was a whole lot of fun, though. We did a lot. The bands, we toured with a band called the Squints out of Ellicott City, which were like really crusty punk dudes, and I was really about that. They were kind of more like a power violence type of genre, which was rad at the time for us, and they were really welcoming. We got to play with like crazy bands like Circle Takes a Square. I got to play with in Detroit. We also played a festival in Detroit one year, and Black Dahlia Murder was playing that, but that was before they were super huge and stuff. So it was cool. Bumped heads with Acacia Strain once, little thing, but again, this was before like it was a big deal kind of thing, so it was just like any other band. It was just kind of cool to be a part of like a really rad music scene and part of really great Yeah, community. Yeah.
So what made your touring days come to an end? I'm assuming they had to stop because you're saying you're just getting back into drumming. So
yeah. So I ended up I fell in love when I was young and I got married and moved to ended up moving to New Mexico, to Albuquerque, with my then fiance. I needed change from Frederick. I grew up in Frederick, Maryland, and it was really rough. It was very hateful. A lot of hateful rednecks where I grew up, and it was not a good time for any of us, especially anybody who was on the queer side or on the
right, in the mildly different, like, right?
Exactly. So it was really rough. But yeah, I had a kind of a falling out with some of the guys I was playing with. We all finally like got into a house together, which some of us were not fully employed and ready for. So I was paying for a lot more than I should have been.
Than you expected, yeah.
And got a little salty about it.
Sounds like youth.
yeah, exactly. Early 20s, you know how that goes.
Yep.
So yeah, I got pretty mad, quit that. And then some of us had already kind of gone separate ways. The original guitar player, Dan, had focused on school more and decided to do that. So I was playing with just Joe picked up guitar, the singer, and we had a different bass player. So everybody kind of started going their separate ways a little bit after like college hit, and we were all kind of figuring out what we needed to do.
Yeah.
Once I was fed up with the house situation and just kind of felt like I was being kind of taken advantage of, I was like, you know what, screw this. I'm going to move to New Mexico and get a new start somewhere and enjoy this happy life with this person I'm with. Lived in New Mexico and tried to start a product out there and couldn't find anybody that wanted to do anything I wanted to do. So I was struggling. I was there for about 2 years, year and a half or so. And then I get my fiance, ended up getting a job for Girl Scouts of America. And we moved out to Tucson, Arizona after that.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, I got married. I was real young. I was still straight edge and stuff, sticking hard to it. And started a couple of projects out in Tucson, Arizona. I did a project that was my last name. It was Go Go Goran Flow because the guitar player loved my last name so much and wanted to call it that. So we was like, that's silly, but let's do it. So and funny enough, his name, it blew my mind. His name was Mike Patton, not the Mike Patton.
Oh my God.
His name happened to be Mike Patton. And I was just like, I love you because of your name.
Yeah, you're already a Mike Patton fan, I am certain.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Wow. So that was pretty cool. So we started playing as Go Go Goran Flow for a bit. He did a lot of really cool recordings and stuff. So we did some of that, never did any live shows or got it together. And then I had a band called, after that was Martyr Me. And Martyr Me did quite a few shows. We did a little bit of recording, but again, never really took off. A lot of the band members ended up having addiction issues and things like that that really kept us from doing the stuff I wanted to do. Then I got divorced and moved back. I was like, I got to move back to Maryland. I got to start doing music again for real. I really need to get this off the ground. And most of my buddies that were from Frederick, ended up in Baltimore. So like, well, that's where the music's at. I'm going to come back home and see how that's going. Never lived in Baltimore before, just lived around it and spent a lot of time here. And so it was like 2011, 2012-ish. And my buddy Dan, who I started the band with, Methyl Orange, he was like, yeah, come on out, man. We'll start this project. He had already had a bunch of bands going on. And I moved out here and he was just too busy to start any projects and stuff. So it was not his fault. You know, it wasn't like he didn't sign any contracts or anything.
Intentions
like,
were good.
Like, yeah. So I never really got anything going. And then I realized like how much I was going through with the divorce and moving across the country. And I didn't know what I wanted to do with my career and make money for, because I hate money and I hate doing things for money and still need to pay bills. So I struggled with all that. And then I realized how much I needed music, because I started having like definitely some like mental health issues and depression and anxiety. And I started treating drums like they were a drug. I was like, oh, I'm gonna stop playing drums for a while and see if I can like sort my life out without needing this, right? Which was an interesting decision looking back, but I still am kind of glad I did go through it, because it didn't let me realize how important and healthy it is for me. It's just been so much like drama and just hardship trying to keep starting these bands over and over and getting so far and then just like getting, you know, kind of cut off at the knees a little bit. So yeah, it took it out of me a little bit, you know?
You know, when I had that, my indie rock boyfriend back in the day, I remember that he was the first person to tell me how much being in a band is what he assumed at the time, and he and I are still friends, and he's married with three kids. But he said then that it's like being married. It's a relationship because you are interacting on such a deep personal level, you know, absolutely, with these people, that you have to find this way to get in sync with them and everything. And totally makes sense to me, because it is, I mean, you're really exposing yourself to make music, you know, yeah, something deep within you to make this kind of music. And your music, it sounds like, has always been therapeutic in some way for you, you know?
Yeah. It's so, always been cathartic and passionate, for sure. Yeah.
For sure. So you have to find people who understand that about you and don't just treat you like a session player or something, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And like I said, I'm not a drummer's drummer. I'm confident in my drum skills, and I love what I do. But yeah, I'm not going to be like, oh yeah, play 3-4-8-9, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. In this tempo. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about, but like, let's just jam it out and I'll make it work.
We'll figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny.
Well, you mentioned, if I'm rolling back a little bit, you mentioned being straight edge, which now you're a bartender. So something changed there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So divorce will do that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You are so not wrong. So, when did the bartending thing enter your life? Like, what was your journey to that? Because it sounds like a possibly interesting one.
Well, it is funny, because I never ever thought I'd, you know, if I could go back in time and talk to younger Heath, he'd be pissed at me right now. But it's funny. I was straight edge, like committed to straight edge. So I was about 27. And I started on that whole thing because I stayed away from all the violent stuff and like the crews and a lot of the bad things that were happening. Yeah. But I did lose a lot of like people to drugs and stuff, especially in Frederick, going up there and being out in the boonies and just having, you know, kids getting into some heavy stuff way too fast. And I didn't want that for myself. I also saw a lot of older people, you know, kind of losing their way with it, and I was like, no, I'm gonna be young and smart and like have my shit together. Everybody expects me to be this punk drummer who's on drugs all the time, and I'm not gonna be what they think I am, right? Like, so I had a lot of drive to do it without any of the negative connotations that come with straight edge. It was just a choice for me that I'm glad I made. But again, couldn't find work really and something I wanted to do. When I was in Arizona and Tucson, I was just doing odd jobs and just trying to make it work. I've been working since I was 15 consecutively. So I've worked in bakeries and things that I can do where I kind of like what I'm doing, but you know, get by and never making a lot of money, but something that I don't hate. Yeah. And when I started working in Arizona, I got a job in doggy daycare because I'm passionately, and I love animals. I love dogs.
I love that.
I swear I'm going somewhere with this.
But I love this journey.
Yeah. So I got really into that and really educated myself on, you know, animal behavior, animal health and safety, a lot of that. So once I moved back to Baltimore, I continued doing doggy daycare. I was managing doggy daycares for about, I want to say upwards of like 10, 11 years.
Wow.
And I got really into it. Yeah. So helped open a couple of places and, really just tried to, again, enjoy what I do. So playing with dogs and taking care of animals all day was like my go-to. And then I was working for a place just down the street from where I live now. And, I was there for about 3 years and had a very emotionally abusive and a manipulative owner, was my boss, and kind of just had, like, I just had it one day, and I was really depressed because I was like, I keep going through these doggy daycares, the same stuff keeps happening where owners either stop caring about the health and safety of the dogs and they're more cared about the bottom line of money and all that, which is tricky, and I'm already very sensitive about how money works and what we do with it, but also at the end of the day, if it's not about the dog's safety, I don't want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
But I also didn't want to leave because I wanted the dogs to be taken care of.
To be safe. So, yeah.
So one day I was just like, I had it. I got to do better for myself because I'm depressed as hell and I can't keep doing this. And I left. And there happened to be a bar opening up down the street from my house that I could walk to. And I was like, well, fuck it. I'm going to serve rum and cokes and vodka sodas, I guess. Like, I can make this happen. Whatever. And I got interviewed by Amy Ward and Aaron Joseph, who are pretty big heavy hitters over here. I don't know anything about them. I don't know anything about bartending. And I walk in and I'm like, I want to bartend. I'll be a great bartender. I YouTube like a whole video the night before prepping for it and like just learning cocktail names and shit. And Amy was so sweet. Amy just looked at me like, okay, let's see. Like, what's your favorite cocktail? I'm like, rum and coke. And they just look at each other like, okay, we'll start you as a bar back. Yeah. And we'll see how you do. And I was like, listen, that's great. I appreciate that. I don't know if I can like make my ends meet as a bar back though. So let's see. I busted my ass there, but they paid me really well. I got a lot of education through that. And so basically if it wasn't for Amy Ward, I probably wouldn't be a bartender. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, once you started doing that, how did it change like your perception of that world? Because, you know, you had steered clear of it for really valid reasons, you know, for a long time. And then once you were in it, it's kind of like, oh, you know, what change came over you?
Yeah. Luckily, I mean, I realized that there's so many similarities between music and bartending, where it is like, it's a collection of beautiful, wonderful, strange, intelligent weirdos. You know what I mean? And I feel like that kind of, you could say that about both industries and that would work out. I think for me, like I learned through bartending that I have an innate, like I love taking care of things and people and I want to make sure everybody's okay. So that helped me because I learned in a safe way through Amy. I learned a lot about just like, you know, worrying about your health on bar too. Like I didn't come, if I grew up at like, and if I started at a dive bar when I was straight edge, I would be like extra fuck this. Like I wouldn't have been able to do it, but because I had started drinking a tiny bit, and kind of let go of some of my own hangups and things like that and understood my own control at that point. Mm-hmm. Through bartending, and I learned the education behind it. I learned the history behind it. The team work behind it, everything was just like, this is like being in a band. This is so cool. You know, my bar is my stage. My service well is my drum set. There's a rhythm to it. I've got like my mise en place is just like my drum setup. Like everything is just like clicking for me right now for my weird wired brain. Nice. That can't do normal stuff. I can't sit at a desk. I can't type on a computer all day. This I can do. This is what I want. The guests to the fans, like everything is just, it just makes so much sense and ticked off so many of the things I was looking for. Not to mention meeting some amazing people, and it helped me open my eyes to a lot of things. Like, even though I was never considered myself like judgmental, definitely like strict with myself, just really strict with myself, and kind of closed off to experiences, and meeting some cool people kind of helped me like let myself be myself a little bit more, you know, and let me grow a little bit myself. Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, I would assume that was not something you expected. You know,
and not at all. Not at all. Yeah. I thought I was just going to apply for, I thought I was just going to like, again, sling rum and cokes at the local neighborhood bar until I figured something else out. And I was scared. I didn't know what else I was going to do. And I was lucky enough to have such a great team. And Amy was such a good mentor to me that I was able to hit the ground running, and I took it so seriously. I worked my ass off and I was like, I love this though. Like, yeah.
So where did you go from there? So you started bar backing, and then they started teaching the real thing. So what's your bartending journey been? Cause you mentioned going to Portland Cocktail Week. So you're obviously deep in it now.
Oh yeah. I got a Fernet hoodie and everything. Look at me. So cliche bartender. So I started bartending in about 2016, under a year of bar backing, and I was just real hungry. I just really wanted to bartend, and got going on that. Amy, again, most of this is all Amy Ward, like just the best boss, but really good friend. Just really amazing human, really inspired me. So they ended up trying to get me to, we had a last minute dropout in a cocktail competition. Mm-hmm. It was a Southside Steaks. It was a Southside competition.
Okay.
And it was supposed to be for newer bartenders who had competed before. Somebody dropped out last minute. I had like a day's notice, like, hey, new bartender, do you want to fill this gap real quick? And I was like, I don't know how I feel about that. Scared as hell. Sure.
Oh, that sounds scary.
I did it. And it was a tiny little competition, but I got people's choice for it. And I was like, oh, that's so cool.
Oh my God, that's judges, amazing.
I was like, oh, that feels really good. That's crazy. So that kind of really got me into like, all right, I think I'm really into this. Amy also had just gotten back from Camp Runamuck and had done had been doing some beverage team stuff for that, or getting into that. And so I started applying for that. I didn't get in my first couple tries. And then kept doing, like, I pick up events for like friends and other coworkers and stuff who just needed help, random like weddings or sponsored events and things like that. And I started having a lot of fun doing that. Finally got into Run Amok, and then COVID hit, so I didn't get to go to my Run Amok session as planned. Waited the 2 years or year and a half or whatever it took, and then finally got to go. And that changed a lot for me too, and started doing more of the like Lush Life events as far as did Portland Cocktail Week last year. I went back to Run Amok for alumni, and just like, again, being around the community and being a part of the events and everything has just been like just really inspiring to me, and just keeps me fueled in what I do, just because every time I do one of them, I meet somebody who's cooler than last. It's crazy. It's like everybody I meet's like, wow, I just have these really wild, crazy experiences. And again, it reminds me of Tor a little bit in a way, where you just you find yourselves in weird situations, but usually everybody, you know, as long as you're putting yourself around people you can trust, then you're in good shape and you'll have a good time. Yeah.
That's amazing. So how long have you been with Dutch Courage now?
Dutch Courage. I started, how long have I been there? It's been about 2 years.
So this is a post-pandemic thing.
I started Dutch Courage right when Baltimore, legally opened up, indoor dining again after the COVID hit. So, it's been about 2 years now. And it's been a great experience. I love it. It's one of the best jobs I've ever had in my life. And probably the coolest bar teams I've ever worked with. Again, aside from like my very first gig at our bar with Amy, and that whole crew, it's just been incredible. Really talented staff, but nobody's pretentious. Nobody's dicks about it. Everybody tries really hard to like learn. It's a cool place.
So what kind of opportunity have you have? Cause now, you know, you got in there, you started bartending, and during this, I'm sure you've learned so much about, like, you're at a gin bar now. Gin is a crazy category. There's so much. Yeah. And so I'm sure you've learned so much about spirits and everything. So, which was really new to you when you first started, cause you were not in that world at all. So do you get the opportunity to be creative? Like, do you get to make your own cocktails? Do you work with the team to come up with the new menu? How does that work for you now?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's kind of essential for me. I've learned too, is like, with my work, I have to have some sort of creative outlet. So I don't think I'd last most places if I didn't have some sort of thing I could create for it. It's pretty cool. We all pitch in on the menu at Dutch. Kim Vo, who is a badass. If you've read anything about Kim Vo, Kim Vo is our bar manager and just does an incredible job. We have like it varies, but it's roughly a 40 item cocktail menu. It's a beast. Wow. Yeah,
that's a huge menu.
And although we have a ton of gin, we have a lot of other great spirits too, so we can do pretty much anything there, which is rad. Basically, thanks to Kim, she has streamlined things in a way where everybody gets an assignment. They let us kind of pick first. They're like, hey, new menu's coming up. Is anybody excited and really want to work with something? Anybody have like an idea they're passionate about? So a couple of people will jump in. I usually sit back and wait for everybody to grab stuff and see what's left over.
Oh,
and then I'll fuck around with the leftovers because I need a little pressure cooker sometimes to get motivated.
I was going to say, I think sometimes when you're given limitations, you do better work. You know,
I know that for sure. That is for me. Yeah. I get overwhelmed easily by spirit knowledge, by everything. But if I can sit down and have like one-on-one time with something and just put my hands on it and play with it, I'm golden. So that's kind of how I've been working things a lot. This is the first cocktail menu, this most recent one. So I've got two cocktails on there at the moment. But I chose Mezcal just because I was so sick of working with the leftover gins that nobody had picked the other one. Just because I had done it for, you know, the last few menus and stuff. We all pitch in. We all get to play with our flavors. We do R&D and everything on bar. Test it out. We all try it out on each other. Like, hey, what do you think this needs? Test each other's palates and stuff and see where we're at, balance it out.
There's that then, band thing again.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, what do you think about this drum beat? Is this totally faster, slower? What do you think?
Totally.
Exactly. It's music. So basically I get to do that. It's fun. I just like playing with weird flavors. I'm not a chef. I don't cook a lot. I don't have the most advanced palate. Not really good at blind tasting stuff. Still getting better about it. I just try to catch some of the little tidbits of information that are thrown at me constantly, and I slowly pick some stuff up as I go. And,
there's a lot.
I learn a lot through doing. Yeah, I enjoy the cocktails I make, and
I can so relate. I do weird stuff.
Yeah.
Well, so I have to ask, since you are such a music person, like, I mean, music is your blood. You know, you just feel that. Have you ever had the opportunity to name any of your concoctions after musical inspirations?
Sure have. Me and my buddy Pat Turner. He works with me at Dutch. We're always joking around a lot about, we have a similar mindset and like keep it simple, stupid with cocktails. We also like to make like kind of elevated, trashy cocktails in a way.
Oh, you know? I love it.
Yeah. So, the punk in us. So we did a punk rock pop-up at the Baltimore Spirits Company cocktail gallery where they were looking for people to just do some fun events. We wanted to raise money for HEARD, which is mental health awareness that Amy Ward is doing with through Health Tender and Safe Bar stuff. So it helped me a lot during the pandemic. So mental health, music, bartending, it's everything I want all in one.
Nice.
So we did two cocktails each. We just named them after punk bands. So I did Melt Banana for one of my favorites. And I did The Locust, which is actually there's an iteration of that on the Dutch menu now. The Locust for one of my all time favorite bands. And then Pat did a Rise Above Black Flag cocktail and did a Bad Brains cocktail. So had a good time with
it.
And then we just played old school punk records the whole night. They don't have like a Spotify setup or anything in the event space, and literally just played old punk records the whole night, and it was a blast and raised money for mental health, and it was fun.
Amazing. That sounds like just a beautiful way to get everything you love all in one place. And not only that, you know, you're doing it for good, you know?
Yeah. It meant a lot.
Always good when that happens. That's amazing. Well,
the first time either of us have done like an event on our own either. Like, we always help out with stuff, but we've never like done our own thing. So that felt good to just do it ourselves. That DIY life. Yeah.
Oh, totally. Have you, in all your years of making music and everything, do you have recorded music out there in the world that people can find if they wanted to listen to it? Or have you you were just on the road forever?
Yeah, it's funny. I have a lot of recorded stuff that has, unfortunately, a lot of it's lost to the ether just because, again, this was pretty early on before like Spotify was up and things like that. Mm. Yeah, and I have not been great with all my moves across the country and all that stuff about my records, even though I feel like I should have. Sometimes I wish I could. I have some... it's hard stuff to look up. You might be able to find some old Methyl Orange stuff on SoundCloud. Supai Helwa has a Spotify song up that you can check out. I'm not on that track, but it's stuff I played for, which is really good. And it's definitely worth checking out. Supai Helwa is rad. They're fun. I've got little bits here and there, but they're not, it's hard to look up. You got to dig deep to find any of my stuff. Yeah.
or people in the Baltimore area are just going to have to check out the shows. So what are the like socials and stuff that people should follow if they want to like, you know, find you at Dutch Kills or check out music or anything like that? Are there any Instagrams that you want to tell people about or Bandcamps or whatever?
Supai Helwa is definitely worth checking out. It's just Supai _ Helwa. I think it's SUPPAI without looking at it. That's great. I'm at Dutch Courage Gin Bar in Baltimore. You can always find me there Thursday through Sunday. Most people recognize me when the hawk is up, of course, and don't recognize me when it's down and I have a hat on. I'll be there. I usually bartend Friday and Saturdays, so always happy to see people and come shout out at me. We have that's pretty much it. We don't have a lot of other recording stuff that's current right now.
Cool.
Yeah.
That sounds perfect. That's a great place to wrap it all up. So thank you so much. I've loved all of this, like just the stories and the energy and just your passion for all of this. It so comes through. You know, it's just very true. So thank you so much for talking with me about all this stuff today. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate that. Oh, I did think of three more ones to tag.
Is
that okay?
Tell me. Yeah, totally.
really rad local band that's just the best. And he used to bar back with me, and that's how I know the singer, Akil. End It. The band End It in Baltimore.
Okay.
Definitely check out End It. They're killing it right now. They're doing like international tours and stuff. They're insane.
You have that on your 7-hour Spotify playlist.
Yeah, you sure. I think I started right with them.
You did, yes.
They are Baltimore in a band. They're amazing. And then
sweet.
I'm going to say definitely check out The Health Tender. Okay. Health Tender is just Amy Ward's business, making sure that everybody through bartending is being as healthy as possible. Is always good for mental health support, physical health, everything. And that's, again, it's made the bartending community and career safe and good for me. So I hope it can help others. So The Health Tender, hit that up too. Yeah.
And what was the nonprofit that you did the pop-up for? Herd, you said?
That was Herd, yeah.
And is it H-E-R-D?
It is, yeah. Okay. H-E-R-D. We do a weekly mental health check-in on Mondays. It's a Zoom call, so I'll be on that after this. It's going to be great. It's basically you just Zoom in. You can be anonymous if you want to. It's just a support group for other bartenders. So if you're a working bartender or you're in the service industry, you can vent, you can share, you can talk about heavy stuff going on in your life. We usually have a theme for the week, and it's just maybe it's about communication this week, but you can talk about anything you want. And it's just literally about how hard it can be working all day, every day, working long hours, being broke, all the things we all go through in the bar industry, or other issues that come up. So yeah, it's really cool. And it's, again, helped me and saved my life a lot of times. So
amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. Cool. Awesome. So a lot for people to investigate here, but I love that you're involved in all of that, and it's all fulfilling. And the bar industry, hospitality is about community at the end of the day. I mean, to me, that's what I got from it. And to me, music is about community too. So it's nice to see community taking care of each other. You know,
absolutely. That's why I love what we do. That's why I love what you do. Yeah, it's all a beautiful thing. That's what keeps me going. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. Don't go away.
Got to give a big thank you to Heath for talking with me. What a genuinely wonderful human, and I'm very, very fortunate to have talked with them and listened to that worldview, because I am into it for sure. So if you want to find Heath, head on over to Dutch Courage Gin Bar. You can find that on Instagram at Dutch Courage Gin Bar. And I wanted to spell some things out for you if you wanted to find the bands. Supai, S-U-P-P-A-I, Supai Helwa, H-E-L-W-A, was the name of the band he's playing with currently, and Grief Eater, the other one. So Supai Helwa is on the Instagram if you want to check that out. Thank you so much, Heath. It was truly a pleasure to talk with you. Oh, wait. I can't forget. There is a massive playlist over on Spotify, so go check out Music and Booze with Mo on Spotify, and you will find, I think it's a 7-hour playlist from Heath. It's huge. You'll dig it. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events, and check them out at themermaidla.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search SheBMO on Spotify, SHEBMO. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.